So now we are going to be hearing from Mandisa Thomas, and her speech is titled Women of Color Beyond Belief, Where Do We Go From Here? So Mandisa is the founder of Black Nonbelievers, Inc., a nonprofit secular fellowship. The fellowship's goals include supporting and creating networking opportunities for secular African-American communities.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I hope you have been enjoying the festival so far. I hope everyone has enjoyed the dinner break. And I'm gonna do my best to keep everyone from falling asleep and doing the whole itis thing. So, yes. As Julia said, my name is Mandisa Thomas, and I am the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers Incorporated, which is actually more than a fellowship. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization that is headquartered in the Atlanta area. There is going to be a recurring statement that I say throughout this talk. There was a quote that I was reminded of recently, which reads, "Go where you are celebrated and not just merely tolerated." And when it comes to, I got involved in the secular community in the 2010-2011. And that's when it was firmly noticed that on the ground, there was still lack of representation from people of color in this movement. Even though I did not come to this movement, I came to this movement knowing that there were other black folks out there. But as far as on the ground representation and leadership, there was definitely lacking. And that was what we sought to change. We did not wait for the community to hear us. We had to make sure, or we couldn't wait for us to be invited to the table. We had to create our own table and create our own house, because it was absolutely necessary, because we knew that there were more of us out here. And to also celebrate that, to celebrate that there are more people of color in this movement. And while we aren't the only voices that should be speaking to our issues, we certainly are the best ones to go to, that we are the best ones to speak on the issues that pertain to us. And in doing that, I have had the absolute pleasure and honor of engaging a number of wonderful people from all backgrounds in this movement, primarily people of color and primarily women of color. And so this work that I've been doing with my organization and others culminated into a conference that was first put on last year, but this also goes beyond the event. When we're talking about institutional issues, representation, diversity, and inclusion in this movement, we have to ask ourselves the questions, where do we go from here? Now that we know that there are more of us out here, where do we go from there? So I'm gonna go get into a bit of background about myself. For those of you who weren't at the table during the dinner break, I am a New York City native, born and raised in Jamaica, Queens, New York. I'm a little biased about that. So I'm a Northeaster. I'm from the Northeast. And I actually, unlike most people from the black community, I had a secular upbringing. I had a grandmother who was very secular in nature. She was a big celebrator of holidays, but it was never from a religious point of view. I had a father who was made to go to church, was forced to go to church. He hated it. And so I was born in the 70s, where that was a very, very radical time within the black community. There was an emphasis on black pride and black identification and African history and culture. So I come from that. I am a product of my community. Moved to the Atlanta, Georgia area at the end of 1997 after my daughter was born. She was 3 weeks old when we moved down there. And when you go to the South, it's a bit different. One of the first questions you're asked is, what church do you go to? And which was a bit of a culture shock for me, because even though religion in the church is still very prevalent, no matter where you go in any major city within the Black community, for it to have such a big presence was just, that was just surprising to me. But over the years, as my family grew and as I came back into and I reflected on my secular upbringing and my identity, and after I reestablished my identity as an atheist in particular, I sought out the secular community and sought to engage more people in person. And again, that's where we found that there was a need to establish an organization called Black Nonbelievers. And so since 2011, we've been going strong, started in Atlanta, and that is a flagship affiliate. We are now up to 15 affiliate groups nationwide, and we're coming up on 10 years in existence. In 2018, I decided to further go where I was being more celebrated and less tolerated, and resigned from my full-time job as the event services manager at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So I took on the task of running Black Nonbelievers full-time and serving the secular movement full-time, because that's where it was determined where that my work was more needed. In addition to running Black Nonbelievers, I also currently serve on the boards for both American Atheists and the American Humanist Association, previously for Foundation Beyond Belief and the Secular Coalition for America. And I also volunteer with Recovering from Religion. How many of you are familiar with Recovering from Religion? So yes, my work is not exclusive to Black Nonbelievers. I am fully invested within the secular movement, which was always one of my goals. And so I think it's important for me to acknowledge that with this work, yes, I was recognized. Some of you may know this. And if you picked up the free copy of Free Thought today, you will see that I was recognized as FFRS Free Thought Heroine for 2019. I was also recognized as the Backbone Award recipient with the Secular Student Alliance in 2019. And I was also the Unitarian Universalist Humanist Association's Person of the Year for 2018. So, and again, this acknowledgement is not why I got into this movement. It really was because there was a need that wasn't being fulfilled, and that it was up to us to do it. Now, with my background in event services, the setup that we see right here is pretty much what my everyday job was. My background is in hospitality and people engagement. And this is an area that our community still needs some serious work. Because we can talk about our intellectual capability and how smart and intellectual we are, but if we don't know how to communicate with that, if we don't know how to talk to people, and especially people coming from marginalized communities, then it's not going to work well. Thank you. It will not work well. But so Black Nonbelievers as an organization is very much event-based. We host regular information, general and support meetings, and gathering and building up that community in person, especially for the Black folks who are questioning religion in favor of leaving. And we also, again, work with other organizations. So with our focus being on events, we have established some of our own. Our first major event was the Reason Rally After Party that we held after the first Reason Rally, which featured atheist rapper Graydon Square, for those of you who aren't familiar with him. We also had the Blackout Secular Rally. I don't know how I'm such a spelling and grammar fanatic. I don't know how I missed that. But it was the Blackout Secular Rally in 2013, which was put on in conjunction with Black Atheists of America, which was another active group at that time. We also celebrated our fifth anniversary in 2016, which featured a number of Black atheist authors, writers, as well as allies in the movement, including Dr. Darrell Ray, who was the founder of Recovering from Religion, and others. And we also now host an annual cruise convention, which is titled BNCCon. And we do have information about that on our website. If you'd like to have more information, or if you're interested in participating, you are more than welcome to do so. Just go to blacknonbelievers.org for that info. So now we come to the Women of Color Beyond Belief Conference, which took place last year from October 4th through the 6th in Chicago. And one of the people I know and love in this movement, who has become a very close and dear colleague of mine, is Sakibu Hutchinson, who is the founder of Black Skeptics Los Angeles, as well as the Women's Leadership Project. And so in our work, which has been done simultaneously, and in forming those bonds and in working with other people in this movement, particularly her, she actually had the vision to have a women's conference, or a conference that featured speakers, presenters, and activists that were all women of color. And so if you aren't familiar with her, she's the author of such books as Moral Combat. She published a novel about the Jim Jones tragedy down in Guyana. It's called White Nights, Black Paradise. So, and given that my expertise in putting events together, we decided to combine forces, because she had also facilitated, along with others, a secular social justice conference a couple of years prior to. So with us joining forces and working together, we came up with the Women of Color Beyond Belief Conference, and this was a culmination of all of the women that we have worked with, women that we have seen speak at various events. If they were predominantly white, they may have been only one or two, but we have engaged enough women in this movement to put together a full-blown conference of activists and speakers who work in various areas of the movement and bring them all together for one event. So there's more than just a spot of us out there. And it is the first one in it. There's been Women in Secularism that was presented by CFI previously. There's also the Secular Women Work Conference that's presented by Secular Woman. But yes, Black Nonbelievers, Black Skeptics of Los Angeles, and the Women's Leadership Project did put on the first ever Women of Color Beyond Belief Conference. That was the first one, was put on last year. Another foundation for this conference was, how many of you are members of the other AHA, the American Humanist Association? So if you subscribe, if you're a member of their organization and you subscribe to their magazine, you would have received their July-August 2018 issue, which featured five fierce humanists, which was myself, Sakibu Hutchinson, Candace Gorham, who unfortunately isn't here, Bridget Crutchfield, and Liz Ross. And this is the only time that any major organization featured more than one Black woman or Black person, period, on their cover. Now, my sources at AHA, at the American Humanist Association, told me that they did feature Alice Walker one year, but the Humanist magazine is 77 years old, 77 to 78 years old. It is the first time ever that they've had multiple Black people on their cover. So, and we were the five fierce humanists. Ironically, that summer I was also featured in an article in Playboy. Same in July, August 2018 issue. So that was a very huge media summer. I'm very proud of that, because hey, it's nice to say I was featured in Playboy. I was in Playboy. I usually give a little bit more details about that, you know, later. But that's always fun to say. But part of that, building on that momentum, was also the other reason, and you see all of us there in person. So if you had the opportunity to be at that event, you had the opportunity to see all of the all five of us women who were on that cover in the same space. And I tell you, there is power in that. There is power and impact when you have events that are put on by people of color in this movement. It makes a huge difference. I guarantee it. But the goals for the conference were this. And these aren't just overarching goals for the conference. They're also for our movement. To highlight the perspective and work of women of color in the secular community. Because again, we are doing work here. To also increase the visibility and opportunities for women of color in the secular community. So, as I said before, not just through Black Nonbelievers, I have engaged a number of women of color who are working with and volunteering for other organizations. But we also want to encourage future support for us women and the organizations that are facilitated by people of color and those who support people of color within their organizations. There is often another recurring theme. We are always asked the question of how can we engage more people of color? How can we engage more women? How can we engage more students? We are always asked these questions by people who say that they care about diversity and inclusion. But yet, when we speak on it and when we tell you what you can do, I'm a very solutions-oriented person. I'm not just going to tell you what the problem is. I am actively going to tell you what you can do about it while working on it myself. So I'm not just expecting you to do all of this work. I understand the responsibility that I have, but understand too that it takes the support from everyone in this community, especially if you want to see it grow. We can't do it by ourselves. So some of the topics of discussion at the Women of Color Beyond Belief Conference last year. Some of them may be similar to other organizations or other events. Some may be different. Criminal justice and reform. That is an issue that heavily affects communities of color, particularly the Black community. Coming out as atheist, that does affect all of us. But end of life preparation, end of life decisions. There's a lot of legislation now for medical aid in dying. And these are issues that do pertain to people of communities of color as well. However, how it is handled is decidedly different, as well as the importance isn't necessarily as accepted as it could be. But also intersectional feminism, the relevancy of the secular movement to women of color, and I will talk more about that later. Secular organizing, parenting, many of us, I have three children. And so I have raised all of them having had a secular upbringing. And yes, people want to know, how do you raise your children as non-believers and being secular and as a woman of color? You know, that perspective matters. Surviving domestic abuse without belief in God. And there were many, many more topics of discussion. And again, all presented by women in this movement, very strong women who are doing some great work. We all, in addition to the plenary talks and the panel discussions, we also facilitated the Secure the Bag service project. And it was spearheaded by Foundation Beyond Belief. How many of you are familiar with Foundation Beyond Belief? Yes, you all should be. We packed thousands of meals to benefit marginalized communities, primarily people of color in the Chicago area. And conference participation was preferred, but it wasn't required. So even if you didn't attend the conference, you could have still come and volunteered for the project. And there you see some pictures of us here. It was after the conference, the main portion ended. And we use one of the meeting rooms to do, and this is becoming a bit more common now with certain events. There are starting to, like American Atheists started doing this, for example, after their main portion of their convention concludes. They started putting together a service project, a meal packing project, that actually benefits the community. And when we talk about some of the good things that's happening, this is one of them, because it's an opportunity for us to continue to put our money where our mouths are, to show that, yes, we as atheists, humanists, secularists, or what have you, or whether you identify as all three or just one, this is where we can put practical applications. I've been saying this for a while. There's that theoretical humanism that we seem to espouse, but then there's the practical humanism that definitely needs to be put into practice here, more of it. And so this is a part of it. Some of the sponsors for Women of Color Beyond Belief, and this is what I'm most proud of, because we had Freedom From Religion Foundation was the legendary sponsor. They were the organization. And I have to commend them on their efforts, because they have scholarships established for students of color, they've recognized that there's a need for that. And there are some efforts being placed into, I would say, more diversity and inclusion efforts. However, when it comes to systemically, there's still some work needed there. So there were a number of organizations that sponsored and contributed, and we're very proud of that, because this speaks to the relationships that we have built as an organization in this movement. And building and establishing relationships is extremely important, not just to the organization, but to me. And I always contend that there is a way to, I'm not going to sugarcoat what the problems are. I'm going to tell you what the problems are, but again, there are ways that we can work with them, and there are ways that we can actually continue to work together through disagreements, through the education and learning process, if that's what you really want to do. And again, I'm proud of the fact that we have established relationships and working relationships with most of the major organizations in this movement. Because again, we do have a lot of common, we have a lot of goals in common. And guess what? If this is a way, if you are really wanting to support more people of color, more women of color in this movement, then guess what you got to do? You got to put your money where your mouth is. So, getting to that, we are doing Women of Color Beyond Belief again in 2020 for this year. And the dates are September 25th through the 27th in Chicago again. And seeing as how we are at a college campus, I will emphasize that we do have student rates available. And similar to this event, our Women of Color Beyond Belief, the registration rates included pretty much all the meals. Even if you did not register for the extra events like the reception and our Divas Ball, because that's what we're going to call it, because we are divas in this place. The student rates include all of the conference and the satellite events, which include all meals, which is why we ask for the sponsorship rates that we do, because we want to help and be inclusive of people, and they don't have to think about where they're going to buy food outside of the conference. And this is something that conference organizers can take into consideration, not just conference organizers, but also attendees and people who want to support. You know, think about the folks who have to come up with extra costs. And if there is a way that we can build that into our events, then that's always going to be awesome. And some of our speakers, you will see some of the speakers that were there last year. And I'm happy to announce that one of our speakers for this year is in the audience, Coven Senapathy, who is based here in Madison. She is the former host of The Point of Inquiry, and she writes for a number of outlets. So you'll definitely want to hear. And this year will focus. We are in an election year. This has been a very, very tense year so far, to say the least. And I think everyone should get involved and get out and vote. We really should. There are some changes that need to be made, and it's going to be up to us to make them. But in that, there is going to be more of a focus on action, not just within the political sphere, but also how we are utilizing. Yes, we have these spaces now. We have our organizations, but how are we taking care of ourselves? How are we taking care of each other? And so many of our events tend to be interactive. There's going to be some mindfulness meditation, some yoga sessions. At our 5th anniversary, we had a line dancing breakout session because that's what we do in our community. Because, and not just in our communities, but for many of us, if you attended Skepticon, the prom was one of the best parts of the event, where people got up, they got dressed up and they danced. And that's something as a community, when we celebrate each other, if we're going to go where we are celebrated and not just tolerated, then we need to celebrate and dance too. And so this is a part of what we bring to the table, though. We bring that flavor with us. And so it's important to experience that. The experience makes all the difference. So I highly encourage folks to consider, not just consider, but definitely come to Women of Color Beyond Belief this year and in the years to come. The question now is, can anyone attend? I wouldn't say it's an absolute yes, because there's a caveat to that. The answer, the overall answer is yes, but the exceptions are anyone who intends to derail the conference focus, believers and non-believers alike. Because I will tell you something, I absolutely encourage everyone to attend in-person events, because that's where you really see how people are. The online atmosphere can really, really jade you, because people feel comfortable saying whatever they want. But when you see them, there's an expression I grew up with, say it in my face. Because that's where you really begin to see how people are. And it's okay for us to build on that, but you really, really find out, you know, where people stand in person, which is why we still encourage that in-person community. But that being said, I have seen a number of white people in this movement who will speak and rail on the racial injustice factors. They will talk about how wrong they are, but when it comes to actually supporting people of color and the initiatives for people of color, one of the first things they'll ask is, well, I'm white. Can I come? Or it's like they're centering themselves in this event or for events for people of color. And as if somehow we're excluding them from coming. And it's like, no. And we've often gotten that as an organization. Well, why does it have to be black non-believers? You know, we're all just this one big happy family. And as Marissa pointed out, it is not. It is not just one big happy family. And if you are going to be one of those people who say you don't see race or color, that means you are blind to the issues that face marginalized communities. And not even just communities of color. We're talking about gender identities. We're talking about reproductive, all of these things. You can't just say you don't see that, because you really don't. So, but yes, if you are that type of person who, because it's fine if you don't want to support an event like this, but it would be very, very hard. Your credibility will be put to question if you talk about matters of racial injustice and you bemoan the lack of representation in this movement, but you don't want to support the initiatives that are really trying to bring them forward. So if you don't want to support it, that's fine, then just stay away. But you shouldn't have to ask whether or not your presence is, you know, is welcome. And I mean, of course people will ask the questions, but it's set on the flyer. Let me go back to that. What's the first line up there? Come one, come all. Please don't ignore that. Do we still need support? Yes. I don't know how many times I'm going to say yes. Because even if you don't feel comfortable attending, you can definitely still support You can sponsor. You can sponsor some folks who may not be able to afford to attend. Or you can also sponsor students. There are ways you can support an event without actually attending it, and this is no exception. You can visit the website for Women of Color Beyond Belief and Black Nonbelievers. And while you're at Black Nonbelievers, you can do what folk women like Marissa and others have done. Even before we leave here today or tomorrow, you can purchase some of our merchandise. You can make a donation to our organization. I'll tell you what, it's needed and it's appreciated. So in conclusion, about where to go from here, in these pictures, and if you're a friend of mine on social media, you see the various representation here. It is definitely more than what you see in this room. And let's just be honest. There are going to be some things that certain organizations can do better than others and have done better than others. We have been more effective in increasing the representation and visibility for Black atheists. We have been effective in growing the voices, contributing to the evidence and the research and the people who are actually doing the work in this movement. We have been effective in bringing those voices that may not necessarily be as popular as some of the ones that we know, but the goal is to make sure that they are as noted and as well known as some of the people that we hold so high in this movement. Their voices matter. The representation matters. I am not the only one who can speak to our experiences. There are more women and more people out there who can do the same. And we've all been working together. We've been connecting with each other, not just through Black Nonbelievers, but again, through events like this. Because again, we are not the token ones. We don't have to be marginalized. Again, there's more of us. Our hashtag for Black Nonbelievers is BN Changes Lives. And we have been doing that. And we've been doing that along with other organizations. And the fact that, yes, we want to get to a place where we can, in fact, where it's more than just volunteer, where people of color do not have to financially depend on the white organizations to employ them and then have to deal with the microaggressions that they do within these organizations, where they're still having to fight for their voice. You don't have to fight for your voice with us. And even for the folks that are there, everyone at that space felt comfortable. You want to know why? Because that is just what we do. Our focus is on the people, no matter who you are. And those experiences matter. And I'll tell you what, it does, again, when you see that this is, our events are what most conferences and conventions should look like. They should be more representative of women, of people of color. And guess what? We also, there's also trans women of color that were featured at this event. So it was very, very inclusive. And when I tell you that, again, when there's a focus more on the people rather than the issues, and the issues are important, but when you are focusing on the people and the fact that you know that there are those whose voices have been somewhat diminished, and you bring them out to a place where, again, they are empowered. And there's power in knowing that there are more of us out here and we are all in the same room. There's power in that. And guess what? That is a power that we can utilize to our advantage, especially in the future. And it is worth everyone is supporting it as much as possible. So if you weren't there, if you were not at this magnificent event, you have an opportunity to be there again this year. And you can also watch the presentations from last year's conference on the Black Nonbelievers YouTube channel, Black Nonbelievers Inc. There is under Women of Color or under WOCBB presentations. So you can go to our channel and watch the presentations and just look at the number of it. And there were definitely more, but guess what? Again, this is, we aren't the only ones who speak to it, but we are among the best. And it is always best to hear from those voices, from the folks who are experiencing it. And, but what you do after that, how you support us after that, how you support our organizations, how you can connect with these women and feature them at your events, because it's about networking. It's about getting them out there and growing the opportunities for folks, even beyond this movement. Because I tell you what, we have connected as an organization with the Smithsonian Museum for African American Culture. And we have been asked to send them archives from our organization and from our work. So just as there are factions within the Black community that is understanding and realizing there is a growing presence of Blacks who are atheists and leaving religion behind, and that there are organized efforts behind it, it is going to be important that those of us in this movement who are still, who realize that we're still underrepresented. Again, we cannot do this alone. There cannot be a pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality applied to us, because we're already working at a disadvantage. We've been working at a disadvantage for years. They are institutional. We cannot ignore them. And so, when we are able to move past that, when we are able to fully understand and actually put our money where our mouths are, then it is a space, then this becomes a place where we are all celebrated and not just merely tolerated. Because guess what? Once we get to that point where we can really, really start to work on these issues and work beyond them, then it's a win for all of us. So thank you. So I think I have time for questions. Yes.
Speak on the computer puzzles. Like, statistically, the fact that Black African Americans especially are much more religious than whites in the American society. And I know that there's statistics on that, and I wonder if you could comment on why, because in some ways it seems puzzling.
Well, it shouldn't be too puzzling considering that you have institutional factors here. So it really does start with enslavement of Africans in this part of the world. Yeah, but when we're talking about, that isn't just the only part though. That's only one part. Yeah, we're talking about the enslavement of Africans in this country, but it wasn't just about religion, even though religion is at the root. Religion is at the root of racism in this country. It is at the root of economic injustice in this community. And also, once slavery and Reconstruction ended, the church became that primary sense of support and validation when the legal system worked against Black folks. So there are a number of factors that we're dealing with here. And when we talk, there is a sticker on the table that says white supremacy is terrorism. Where's the lie? There's no lie in that. Because it's more than just the religious factor. When we think of, and often, there are a number of people who see the overwhelmingly white representation of atheism as being antithetical to Black folks. Even though it's a lot of the Christian nationalism that is behind the racism, the white Christian nationalism. But we're talking about layers of institutions that took time to implement, and it's going to take for folks, if you've never had to real fully engage folks in the Black community, you wouldn't understand it. Just having that outsider's view. Because even I haven't been raised secular, and having been raised with my wokeness, because I was raised with that wokeness. I learned about how Christianity was imposed on my ancestors. And I even asked the question. But having grown up in the community, you kind of understand there's a psychology there that comes along with not just the church, but with also the other institutional factors that play a huge part. And we have to be more honest about that and understanding, because religion affects all of us, really. But yes, it affects some of us a bit more deeply. And instead of just having this, well, I'm confused by it, it's better to understand it and understand why. And why we have much more, why there is more of a challenge for an organization like Black Nonbelievers more than your other organizations. Yes?
Yeah, if somebody wanted to start a branch in Milwaukee, assuming there's not one there, how would they do it? And secondly, what would be some of the events that a very small startup group could do? What would you recommend, figuring that, you know, it's just going to be a few people at first?
Yeah, so much like most groups, we encourage our affiliates to just host one meetup a month, whether it's in a restaurant, a coffee shop, something that is more social in nature, because most people are looking for that space to be validated. They are looking for that camaraderie. I can't tell you how many times I've heard, I thought I was the only Black atheist out there. And just is it just a relief for folks to be able to say that and see other people in person. Now, we used to have an affiliate here, in Milwaukee. Unfortunately, the founder passed away suddenly 2 years ago. So we are looking for folks who would be interested in reviving that affiliate. And we can talk about that, because one thing that most of the people who know me and who in this room know me, they know that I'm very personable. There are not that many channels you have to go through to get to me. So I coordinate those efforts directly. And so it's just as simple as us vetting, you know, the organizers, going over our expectations and guidelines, gauging their dedication level, and getting it set up or getting it reset up. So it isn't a very difficult process, but what becomes challenging is the consistency. And I think that that's also another recurring theme, because, you know, we get excited or we get amped up about something in the moment, but maintaining something long term takes time and it can be daunting. So getting people to remain committed and dedicated becomes the challenge there. But yes, unfortunately, there was a tragedy with the Milwaukee affiliate founder and organizer. So if there is anyone else who is willing to step up and run it, of course, preferably a person of color. We absolutely promote that in our leadership. So if there is someone or people who would be willing to reorganize, to revive that affiliate, then we're more than open. Yes.
So yeah, I'm one of those people. I just want to say thank you for like being front and center and actually like just centering and talking about our experience.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like it gets erased all the time.
Let me, you know, even
it's
with
just, it's just refreshing even just hearing you talk, like, you know, being an atheist since I've been 14 from the Pentecostal church, and not like ever hearing anyone's voice that's like culturally competent to me, and then like you step up, and that's a lot, because I know how hard it is to, you know, deal with making white people uncomfortable. It's hard. It's that's
not for me, it ain't. but you know, yeah.
It's some labor, y'all.
It is.
And there's a reason why Black people walk away from this.
Yeah.
Right. It's because we can't just take the cultural incompetence.
And you know, even building on that, there are, when we talk about intersection, we're talking about dealing with predominantly white spaces for people who come at us and expect us to be representatives of the entire community. But we're also talking about dealing with our own community, who don't think we exist, or who don't think we should exist, or who think that we're trying to be like those white people, who Matthew, who's in the audience, he recorded that. There was a woman who got in my face a couple of years ago and said she could not believe that as a Black woman, I had the nerve to identify as an atheist in front of these white devils. If you've never had to deal with that, then guess what? Yeah, you have to understand, or even if you have never experienced it, this is the type of stuff that we go through on top of everything else. So again, we have those extra added challenges that face us. And it is a lot of work. there is a lot of work in not just creating, but maintaining those support and foundational spaces. They take support, it takes time, and it takes resources, but luckily, it is something that is within my skill set to do, and it's something that I love to do. Bringing people together is something that I love, and doing it well is what I love to do, because there's a difference between doing it and then doing it right. And this is something that, again, that we all have to work on. We have to work on doing it right. And it's a constant process. We're never going to get it right all the time, but you continue to work at it. You know, you don't just stop at one mistake, because that's where we fail. But yes, absolutely, it does take that work. And I definitely, if I am the one that is strong for those who can't be, then that's fine with me. But yes, no, that's totally fine. But when we give each other that strength, when I know that there, because sometimes it gets hard in this movement, because for as many people who know that, you know, who know who I am, there are still other people who are going to defer to either someone who's white or who's male, or someone who's seen as more validated in doing this work. But for those who've ever said, I thought I was the only black atheist out there, thank you for existing. I mean, I've had people who come to me and cried because they thought they were the only ones out there, and they're not. And it's not that folks can't understand, because again, when we see each other in person, that's a better way. There's a lot more white folks who get it, but in order for us to get to that place where we can all see each other, again, it's going to take that support and doing that work that is often hard but necessary. If there is nothing else, thank you. Thank you.